So welcome back, everyone. Hello, hello to our next episode of In Conversation With. My name is Alicia Soans. I'm really excited about having these conversations with people around the world of further education. And basically, this came from the aftermath of equity exchanges, meeting some amazing game changers in the sector on the fabulous work they're doing. The first episode, we got to meet amazing Rachel Webley from BMET College, talking about how she's been able to embed race and practices in English. We met some fabulous people, more amazing people from the adult education sector. And I'm here with another game changer today, really creating some amazing changes when we think about embedding Black history into the curriculum areas that you're working on. So I'm going to let you do your own little introduction. So please introduce yourself and welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm Izzy Wood, and I teach geography at HSDC College in Alton, which is in Hampshire.
Wow. So, yeah. So, quite rural, would you say, Izzy? Yeah, when we think about it.
We're talking about a really, rural area, like lots of farming.
Demographics, I'm assuming. I haven't been here recently. Not as diverse as other populated areas.
Yeah, I'd say the majority of our students are white, but we're now having more students in the local community from areas like Kenya and South Africa. Due to Brexit, some of the big employers in the area are actually recruiting from other countries because of obviously not coming from Europe. So we are seeing quite a change in our secondary and primary schools. So I think in the next few years we will see change here, but generally the majority of the people here are
white
passing.
And that's the journey. And because of migration, different aspects, you're going to get, a completely different mix up of, amazing, fabulous people. However, I always say, and having this conversation today is really good because, like, my background, when you think about having these really important conversations around, equity, diversity, and inclusion, is that the college I worked in at the time was very white, middle class, rural, based in the countryside. But that shouldn't stop us as well having these conversations, working on it, because I think it's so important. So tell us about a little bit about your own journey on this area.
Yes, I suppose it's been like a drip kind of thing until finally I found the group Decolonizing Geography at one of the Geographical Association conferences. And so I suppose myself, I had learned to do this just by myself and hadn't told anyone I was doing it. I wasn't aware that anybody wanted me to do it. I was just, from my degree and my kind of lived experience of traveling, and the privilege of being able to go to different countries, I've experienced different cultures and lived in different places and traveled in different places. You can spot things in textbooks and you can spot things in teaching geography particularly that just feel wrong and sit uncomfortably with you. So I think bit by bit I did things live with the students and I'd be a bit like, oh, that feels a bit uncomfortable. Should we talk about why? And then I would be like, okay, let's plan for this. Let's actually teach them about why this is wrong or why this is not great. And because, some of the lessons wouldn't represent all the students in the class. And you don't want to be in a position as a teacher where a student in the class feels left out or like that doesn't represent them. And I worked in London in a couple of schools, but one of them was sort of, again, quite a white school, but the kids had traveled a lot. And so they had experiences. It was like a private school. So they actually, a lot of them had lived internationally. They had experiences and they'd be like, that doesn't represent what I saw in this place. So you have to kind of use those students' experiences, but also take responsibility to do the research and understand things a bit better. So I remember one of the first places I think I put this was, we used to teach about the Olympic Park redevelopment in year seven. It's like a classic geography thing. And I think so my background, my master's is in international sports policy. And my undergrad, I went to Ghana and I did the research, my dissertation in Ghana about the migration of football players. So From that, I implemented stuff about John Carlos and Tommy Smith's Black Power salute in the Mexico 68 Olympics. And also we watched the film Race about Jesse Owens. And so I just sort of dropped it in that scheme of work. And I didn't really tell my boss and they didn't put it across year seven. I just did it in my lessons. But then when people find out, they're like, oh, that's a good idea. We should probably do that. You know,
your journey started really from that curiosity model of working with yourself. How do we get comfortable getting uncomfortable and starting to like research, asking ourselves questions and start building it in and through working with like different people, culture, society, and then like bringing that back in and looking at it from that student-led approach, would you say as well? So I love that.
Yeah, I think so. And also, you know, the experience I had in Ghana doing research, and also my undergrad was in international development and geography. So I very much, we spent the whole 3 years like critiquing aid and international aid and the experiences of people that are on the, you know, the other side of that. And so, and then, you know, seeing it in Ghana, I really felt like when I was in Ghana, it took like 2 years for me to unpack what I had experienced, which was, you know, the impact of colonialism and the sociological imagination of a people who had been colonized. And I think if I hadn't have been there and sort of been researching migration and been researching there, I wouldn't have any like lived experience of how this feels or looks or anything like that. So I think travel, you know, really helps with that. In addition, I think languages really helps with, you know, obviously I teach geography, but I also advocate a lot for learning a language, because once you learn a language, you can really understand things in a different way. And there's loads of decolonizing that can come from that, and anti-racism that can come from understanding things in those perspectives. Yeah,
100%. And I don't know about you, but I think sometimes, especially if you are like a typical Brit, when you go abroad, you mean sometimes those own biases kick in where you expect people to be able to speak English, and it's like actually having that real, you know, that stop and pause moment and going, why do we not understand, like speak or even a few words in different, you know, different language when we go to countries. That's a really important part of that journey, and having that stop and pause moment and then continuing, because you can just like make some amazing aspects from that when you work together. So yeah
and I think, like, you know, I've had like role models, like my dad has always spoken multiple languages. I learned Spanish a bit later, but my twin learned Turkish when I went to university. She moved to Turkey, so she learned Turkish really quickly and lived there for a long time, and my dad had lived in Turkey and worked abroad for a long time. So I think as well, your own, like what you've seen and done in your own life really helps, because if my dad hadn't traveled internationally and like done that for his job, you know, I feel like, you know, when you talk about the gaze with Edward Said and Orientalism, I think in some ways you need like windows through that gaze to kind of open up to this like world of anti-racism, and otherwise it's not accessible to you. Like, how do you, as a, like for me, I identify as white British. So how would I have seen like those, like the wrong side of it, if there weren't these little windows to say, oh, that's not quite right, or this is what's actually going on? And that's
that journey going as well. And that was one of the questions I wanted to ask as well, like part of that topic conversation. I've had a lot of, you know, I speak about this a lot, and I always say it's not just for people from, like, you know, anything around intersexuality. It's not for like the black and brown community to advocate on embedding, you know, black history, different aspects in, the same for LGBTQ plus, all these different aspects. It's about how do we all make sure we are inclusive, you know, in the work that we do. So on your own journey, what was it like, you know, being in a space and saying, actually, I'm going to advocate, and this is really important to have these conversations and highlight it as well further?
Yeah, I think one of the first things I did at this college was invite Dipo Falayin to come in and speak about the book, Africa's Not a Country, because again, I saw him talking at the GA conference, and then I just grabbed him at the end and was like, hey, you know, I work locally, because it was at Guildford at the time, and I said, I think you need to come in and talk to my students. And I didn't actually promote it massively in the college. I didn't really tell SLT. I was just like, yeah, I've got this speaker coming in. So it's quite lonely, quite kind of like, oh, I'm going to do this side thing where I just invite people from different backgrounds and perspectives to talk to my students, because I can only speak from my perspective. And that's kind of turned into like a lecture series, and lots of people have come to speak here. And so my students have recognized why I've done that, and they've understood, like, that's been really valuable. And they talk about it. And, you know, people come back, like I had Iram Samar come and do a talk about anti-racism and geography. But then she came on a field trip recently and we did, you know, a talk together at the GA conference this year. And we've like continued to work together. So I think building that network of people to work with, like externally, has helped. Because otherwise you're just like on your own being like...
And like I always say, you know, it can be such a lonely place, you know, EDI, if you feel like you're the only person in silo working on different aspects. So it's really, you know, that imposter syndrome, you know that the work that you're doing, you know, is amazing, but sometimes you've got different people in your ear sometimes, or it's a bit not up that ladder, which it should be. I think it's really important to get that support, your cheerleaders, I call us, you know, having cheerleaders, different areas, different colleges, having those networks. And I think that's the best part, is like network. I always said to people, network, 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 because it's you just get to meet so many people and bringing the communities in, you know, you're not on your own. And I that's really important, like for myself. I don't know how you felt. Where I don't know if you were ever taught Black history in school, Izzy, but I was.
No recollection.
And I remember being taught Black history in school. This is probably one of the reasons why I didn't choose history, as you know, as I got older, and I'm actually now I'm a curator, I work for museums, was because all I talked about at the time was slavery and civil rights. So you can imagine what it's like for your peers, but also for you, like for someone like myself, being from Black and Brown community. Going, so my on my father's side of the family, we were just slaves, and then we just fought for our rights, and that's it. Right. So hearing all these other, you know, and unpicking that and listening to these stories is so important. But if we go back as well, if that's the only stories or some of the aspects we hear in history, because that's all that's put out, how do we make those changes? You know, how do we start to enlighten ourselves on that journey?
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to be vulnerable and tell you I feel so dumb, because I remember, like I said, I did geography and international development. I did it at Sussex Uni, and everyone to do international development, everyone, it was compulsory to do this course called Colonialism and After. And I walked into the lecture. OK, and it says, I think, a lot about my secondary school. And it says a lot about, I suppose, like my parents' priorities and education of like what we should know at the time. But I walked in and was literally halfway through the lecture, I turned to the person next to me and said, "What's colonialism?" I had no idea, no idea. And I had to go home, I remember, in the like that Christmas, and teach myself a short history of history and be like, okay, I have no idea. Like, I didn't take history from year nine. I hated history until then. And no one was giving anything relevant. But actually now, like, you know, I've just done taster sessions to year 10 for coming to this college. And I was, you know, we talked about Haiti, and I had like this video up, and I made them like pair like social, economic, environmental and political things that happened in the past that have influenced the current day Haiti, and how you cannot separate history and geography, and that it's totally connected. And that by just saying, you know, Haiti's a poor country, which it says in some of the textbooks, it's just one sentence, like that isn't geography, that is just rude, because like you don't know why these things have happened or like how they've happened, and it's ignorance. And so like, you know, I think one of the things for me, and like, you have to start somewhere, is by saying, oh, I don't know anything. Okay, now I'm going to have to read like a million books, and taking that time.
That's the most important step. I think that is the part of ourselves, you know, saying, put our hands up, being vulnerable and saying, I don't know. We don't know everything, but we want to learn. We want to get that support. And I think that's really important space and place for leaders to say that. It's important space for lectures, everyone to have that understanding, that real stop and pause moment. And then you can build on it, like you were saying. And like, even when you speak about, you know, the language just written in the text sometimes too, like you're saying, Haiti's is poor, had the same when you think about Ghana too. I've traveled there, and people have those assumptions that it's going to be, you know, a certain way, lifestyle is going to be in poverty. It actually is some amazing affluent areas, same as like the UK. Not everybody lives in Buckingham Palace. It's that sort of biases that we have, and it's about how do we unpick that and challenge ourselves with the language.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's so hard to do that at second, in an FE space, because we are like, what I like to say is like, the students are like baked by the time they come here. We can only do the icing on the cake, because they've had primary school, secondary school for like years, and we've got 2 years of these kids. You know, how can we affect change in those 2 years? So you have to work quite hard to do that, because sometimes you're unpicking stuff that like their family have said, they've been taught since they were like 4 years old, the media representations of places. And I think, you know, it is getting better in the media. I think there's obviously more awareness since 2020, and there's more awareness in general with social media and stuff. So in some ways, some of the kids know stuff, but also, you know, when you bring those students on, like I've had the experience that the students that are interested do go away, and you've mentioned Ezra Said, you know, and you've maybe watched like a 3-minute clip or something in a lesson. I've had a student say, yeah, I just ended up watching like 4 hours of Edward Said videos last night and I haven't had any sleep, but I feel like I know a lot about the world. And I was like, okay, that wasn't your homework, but great, you know. And it's, they kind of take it on. And I think when the students are inspired to then take it on in their own lives, you feel like you almost like a weight is lifted, because you're actually decolonizing with your students, not like to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's like working together or looking at that student approach and coming backwards and forwards on that aspect. So what is the impact, would you say, on your students? Because sometimes people say you need to see it through the data. Yes, that's lovely, but it's those different aspects too. And it's really lovely hearing those stories. But tell us more around the impact it's had.
I think some of the students have felt seen, and some of the students have like felt freed. I've like created something called a racial literacy test, which I do at the beginning of the year, and then at the end of them, they're learning with me. And the things that they say,
break it down.
Yeah, so it was inspired by like, I work a lot with Daryl Sinclair, who is a consultant as well. And he's like my mentor, and he always talks about racial literacy. And I was like, okay, racial literacy. And then I was like, I don't need to test it, but I think I need to like create some boundaries for it to understand what it is. Because I realized in this like rural area where the majority of my students are white, I actually had to teach my students about racism before I taught them about anti-racism. Because the first time I did it, I think I took for granted teaching anti-racism that they would know what I was like antiing. And I don't think they have enough understanding of the complexities and levels of like structural, you know, and institutional racism. So I ended up teaching quite a lot about institutional racism. And I think they really like took on it, and they were kind of like, they were able to see where it led. And I would be able to say, okay, so what is this, you know, how does this relate to institutional racism, or like, what is this like evidence of? And we can see that in things like, you know, Hurricane Katrina, or and looking at like the consequences, the really inequitable consequences for people who are victims of that hurricane. And my students are like really able to put it all together. So I've had some students like thank me for like changing them and making them see, you know, things. Because as well, even though I'm doing anti-racism mostly and decolonizing mostly, I'd say, I've had loads of gay students, and they know that I represent equality. And so even though I'm not necessarily representing like an equality, or I am, but I'm not like teaching that much about it because it's not as relevant to geography, if they've had problems in other spaces, they feel comfortable to come to me. So I actually think there's like a really important and often understated, and I would like to state now, there is a very clear link between EDI and safeguarding. And I don't think people understand that EDI is a safeguarding issue. And I'm like a huge advocate for that, because children, we are not teaching subjects, we are teaching children. And those children I know feel safer talking to me about issues that they've got, either in their home life or in their, you know, at college or even at work. And so,
That's really interesting, because a lot of people, when we talk about, you know, equity, diversity, inclusion, and have these aspects, you almost get students know you're the safe space, the person that, you know, point of call to talk to around that.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to know, like in different spaces and places, it's still the case. And it's about actually, when you talk about safeguarding, you know, EDI should be that golden thread, I say, woven through everything that we do. And it should be that add-on tick box approach, lip service. And we can see when safeguarding and EDI are not together, what happens. We've seen so many horrible cases, adultification with, you know, child Q, you name it. So this is why it's so important. And also, again, in these spaces and playing, you know, spaces that we're in, and, you know, as educators, it's about putting our hands together. Like, we don't know everything, but it's about having that support. Education is, you know, is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world. Not my quote, I wish it was, Nelson Mandela, but it's about how do we then educate ourselves and have that cultural awareness training, having that support, breaking that down and really kind of making sure we see things from that, I call it that EDI lens, Izzy. I don't know if you like when you walk, so walking into that space and looking at it physically and going, does this represent my community? Does it represent all of the community that we teach within? Is it, you know, accessible? All these different aspects. And if it's a no, we need to kind of go back sometimes to the drawing board and go, working together or working your networks, amazing people, to really break it down. And it's that ripple effect, isn't it? Like, bit by bit, it can happen.
And with that ripple effect, what I did was, for my second years, based on conversations that they'd had with me in the first year, I made them a toolkit to take to their home life, to take to work, to take with conflict with friends, because, you know, they actually need sentence starters of how to deal with this. So I I'll show you. So part of it is like this Jahari window model, which is accepting when you're in a blind spot. You know, do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So just educating them like about how to use that. And actually I did that for a student that needed to talk to their parents about anti-racism, and they felt uncomfortable with the way their parents were behaving. And so and so that was really important tool to give them, to be like, talk to your parents in this way, use the model. But then I found this online. Harvard's got this diversity and inclusion and belonging calling in and calling out guide. So I mean, I didn't write this. I took it from, you know, what was already out there. And I think that's one of the tricks, isn't it, to like use what's already out there. Someone else has created these sentence starters of words that you can use, conversations you can have. How do you call someone in? How do you call someone out? You know, an example of this on here is, for example, I'm curious what your intention was when you said that. And so it's like a safe way to sort of, you know, discuss situations or whatever. And I think, you know, students do come across that, particularly in this area, in their work life. And even if they're not going to use that whilst they're like an 18-year-old working in Sainsbury's, they may have that in their mind for like their future life. And I think it's important for them to know that there are ways to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, because sometimes we need to get, again, you know, getting comfortable and thinking about how do we have these conversations. It's not just about in, you know, the college sector. It's about outside, like you said, how do we challenge these conversations and doing it in a safe way too, and having that support around you. It'd be really good if we can get that link as well added on to after this podcast. I think it'd be really good for people just to have a look and look at materials that we have, because there's no point rewriting things. We've got it out there already. It's about how do we work together and have these conversations further. Izzy, I really wish you were my geography teacher years ago, because it just sounds fabulous. What are your, I'd say, three tips and tricks for anybody listening to this right now and saying, this is phenomenal, I might be on my own, you know, in my own sort of sector, working on this in the college, we're working with young people, or it might not even be a lecture. What are sort of your sort of free takeaway moments you would give somebody to think about it moving forward?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing for me in educating myself was Audible. And I know it costs, but like, you don't have the time in the day when you're a teacher to read all the books you need to read in order to understand all the other things you need to understand. You also cannot travel and like spend time in all those places. You know, like, I've been to like, say, 4 or 5 African countries and a couple in South America and stuff, but I didn't do that whilst I'm working. I did that in my like 20s. Do you know what I mean? So whilst you're working, how can you understand these places and things? And I just find listening to books, because this isn't about a quick fix. It's not about being able to do this overnight. It's about educating yourself to be able to see when things happen, like you're saying about you know, language, the way people speak about things. And there's just things, you know, every year when you look at your own resources again, you go, you've learned something else in that time, and you come back to it and you go, oh yeah, that word is a bit, that's giving me this vibe. And I think having knowledge you know, and educating yourself through podcasts or Audible books is just it's a game changer for people with no time.
Even just popping in, you know, like your headphones and just listening away, it can be really helpful. I think it's just having that accessibility, isn't it?
I mean, there's no quick fix to this. Like, particularly for me, you know, I've spent time in Ghana, but you know, my friends from Nigeria, like, their parents have been telling them about this since they were at school. They had to unpick it their whole life, because obviously the curriculum wasn't catering to them as a Nigerian citizen in the UK. Or actually a British citizen whose parents are from Nigeria, you know. So for me, like, I didn't have that. I literally, like I say, started it that day at university myself. So it is just about educating yourself and committing to it and asking other people to commit to it too. And in SLT and stuff, don't be afraid to be like an active anti-racist and, you know, saying things to people.
That's switching that dial, isn't it, from non-racist to, you know, active, like you said, active anti-racist, and actually saying, why do we do things like this, and asking those questions. But also, I think it's really important to have people from the very top. You need to have that EDI governor. You need to have, you know, like you said, your senior executive team or senior leadership team supporting you, cheerleading people on. It might not have all the answers, but it's about getting that support too, because I think that's so important. When I started my own journey, I did it from a very grassroots level, student-led approaches, and I obviously burst doors through. But having that support from the top and breaking it is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually on that, like, if you don't have that, it's not necessarily support, but if you don't have that interest, my boss has, you know, I'm the only geographer in this college, so my boss will contribute to paying for things. So on my field trip to Brixton and Elephant and Castle, she approved paying to go to the Black Cultural Archives in Brixton. So even if she's not supporting me by talking to me about it or doing anything kind of like in the college, she is allowing us to go and do those things by paying for it and like putting the money into resources, those kinds of things. Yeah. And I think, like, if the college aren't doing things, I am, and they're paying for it, you know, they're paying for me to go to conference. And I think at geography conferences, you know, both the GA and the RGS, those are spaces where people are talking about decolonizing, and we can't forget where our students are going next. You know, our students are going to universities who are talking about decolonizing. You know, if you look at the Sussex University geography modules now, there's no way you can walk in there without knowing what decolonizing is. So I think that made me realize I have to tell my students we're decolonizing, because otherwise it's unfair to them when they go to university.
Either, are you? And like 15 plus years ago, this was never a topic of conversation that I would, and that's why I didn't go into going to those subject areas at university, because it wasn't there. And it's about talking about the British history, like, you know, the British Black, exactly, you know, history aspects too, and linking it in so everyone has that sense of belonging, you know. And that's so important under all the 9 protective characteristics too. And I think sometimes, I don't know how you feel on this, Izzy, race is one of the hardest conversations to have with people, you know. I think when we talk about disability or LGBTQ+, that's all, but sometimes when we get to race, people get really stuck, you know.
Yeah, I think they do. And I think it's part of the politics of this country in terms of our approach to migrants and migration. And it's been like a long history of like negativity. And there's absolutely no reason why it needs to be that way, because it didn't start that way, you know. And I always tell my students, like, TFL had a recruitment base in Kingston, in Jamaica, after World War whatever, because I didn't do history. People to come over and work here. So you know, it's like they were invited, and I always stress that these people were invited.
Yeah, they were told that the pays are gonna be paid, you know, with gold, and I remember as a curator, and actually my great-grandfather had a letter too, and they used to go to places like Jamaica, actually go and like do the recruitment processes, I've got a letter from my great-grandfather too around those conversations and stories to say, look, people were invited. So it's about, you know, those narratives that may change, the biases we may have in society. So that's really important as well, to, I call it, those the untold stories, and getting them through to make sure that they are part of history and part of the conversations we're having.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really critical. And I think as well, making connectivity, like in geography, people are very happy to go and teach about Rio de Janeiro, you know, and every child knows about Brazil. And in some cases, children think Brazil is the only thing in South America. But actually, obviously it's not. But do they think about why there are South American migrants in this country? Do they know about the nuances of things that have happened in South American history? And as a result of that, like why we have massive Latin American communities in South London. And for me, what I try and do is like connect teaching about Medellin in Colombia and teaching about, you know, Nevado del Ruiz, the Lahar volcano in Colombia, and teaching about the perceptions of place through Disney films about Colombia. And then I go, okay, now we have like a massive Colombian community in Elephant and Castle. So it's like connecting those stories and not just teaching about Medellin and not just talking about that Elephant and Castle, but it's about going, this is a holistic story, and it's a story that may not impact people in this room, but somewhere, some in maybe a school in London, that story is the story of someone's parents. So, you know, it's important that people know the connected geographies and not these isolated geographies.
And it's like a silo approach. And I call it the power of stories, because it's really important. And hearing those stories too, they might not be from these communities, different aspects, but it's linking in and understand how it's important. How, as we were, you know, as in the UK, we are a massive, big, amazing melting pot, and how we bring so much different aspects to it. And I always say, it's like when you bake the cake, you need to have add all these ingredients in to get, you know, that cherry on top approach. That's what we have here. And it's about, like you said, again, breaking it down. So like the resources part is so important, and actually there's a lot of funding elements and charities and organizations you can link and work with too to get that support if you haven't got that, maybe that funding or resources, like how your colleagues have so generously been able to. So it's about understanding that journey too. Touring trips as well, that is, I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah, we do them at college.
Another really great way, and embedding that into, you know, EDI, linking into as well. A few years back, I did do that with a college I'm supporting, took young people to Thailand. And it was really interesting, because the majority of the students we took were from the black and brown community. It was really interesting because we went up the mountains. A lot of them were darker skinned too, like myself. But they never saw, like, you know, some other people from different, you know, different countries, cultures that look like ourselves. And, like, you're from the UK and you do these certain types of jobs. So it's those higher aspirations and teaching about culture and hair, the different tech, that was just phenomenal. So you can get so much experience, and you can teach so much around, you know, EDI out there, and same coming back in that holistic approach too. So really great ways, I think, of breaking it down. So we've got that. We spoke about the resources. Anything else? Education, resources?
I mean, I think one of the best things for Black History that has, like, in the last couple of years is, have you seen that the iPlayer, like Steve McQueen did that iPlayer series, the, I don't remember what it called, but it's like about Mangrove Nine. You've got all the stories that you just want students. It's like, if you don't want to learn it yourself and do the hard work, he's done the work for
BBC
you.
BBC Small Acts.
Small Acts.
I do, because I've met Leroy Logan, Alex Whittle.
Yeah.
They're all phenomenal, and it just so breaking it down, BBC Small Acts talks about a Black British history and the icons. I call them your national heroes on your doorstep that we don't hear about. Like Leroy Logan was one of the first Black police officers, you know, based in the UK. Alex Whittle, who's an amazing, fantastic, you know, awful writer, his own journey. And there's so many amazing stories. I think there's about five on there. I can't remember.
Yeah, a bit about Akala and Akala's story, and a bit about, like I say, the Mangrove Nine and Darkest House. So that's really relevant to gentrification in Brixton that we teach at the moment. You know, everyone's talking about gentrification in Brixton. Why not talk about Darkest Howe? Why not talk about Olive Morris and get your students to go and watch that in their spare time? It's great. It's such good learning. I think, yeah, there's a lot out there that you can use. There's loads on Channel 4. So, yeah, promoting kids doing around the subject learning is really helpful.
And if you haven't watched, put it on your top list as well. BBC Small Acts is a phenomenal show. And that's actually how, I think a few years ago, really my journey, that's why I really wanted to be a creator. And working with like Leroy Logan and it was just phenomenal. And it's just so important. And I always say those little steps can create some massive, big, giant steps. So I always say, you know, it's never a wrong time to do the right thing, is there? That it's so important. When people go, oh, we'll just sit on it, we'll just wait a few weeks, or we've got so much paperwork, I've got to mark, you know, lessons. No, just those little bits that can really propel you to, you know, move forward on your own journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if you don't know how to do it, you know, I've put all my resources for free on my link tree, which is on my Twitter or X account, because I'm just like, it's taken me 2 years to decolonize all my resources and the textbook and everything. It's free because most of it comes from the textbook. I'm not charging for any of it, but I have reworded things. And so, you know, if you go on there, you can just click on it, you know, download the bits that you need to like have a look at. And a lot of the time I've written in the comments, like, you know, all that sits uncomfortably, the way they've written about, you know, the way that, for example, African Americans are looting or whatever. And it's like, there's so many places that you can go, but I've personally have made all my resources and I keep it up to date. When I see something that I'm like, oh, I need to decolonize that, like I'll do it and then re-upload it onto my Google Drive, and all of them are free. So I just think, like, yeah, like there's plenty of people that share their resources, and the Decolonizing Geography website also shares things. I think there's a Decolonizing Economics website. So it's not about being alone and doing it by yourself and kind of leaving it to one side. It's like, oh, someone else has already done this. Okay, I also teach AQA geography A level. Let me go and see what Izzy's done. I'll just have a look, download what I've done, and like use whatever you want, scrap the rest, you know.
It can be embedded into GCSE A level. It's not that silo approach, but how do we make sure it's inclusive and embedded in? And that's really important. Oh, Izzy, I hope this is hopefully one of many conversations we'll continue to have. And I'm hoping that more people will be sharing best practices with yourself and coming back and going, that was really interesting. So I wish you were my geography teacher. However, we've got years later, I'm loving that we're having these amazing conversations and continuing that journey. So thank you for continuing that dance, I call it, that ripple effect approach, and being a part of this today. Have you got any final thing to say to our audience that may be listening?
I don't think so. Just get on with it. Decolonize your curriculum now.
On that note, thank you so much for listening. On our next episode, we're going to continue the dance and on the journey, and we're going to be speaking to Piers Alexander from West Suffolk College and his own journey about anti-racism practices. So it's so lovely to hear all these amazing stories, case studies, the impact, and moving things on and forward. So thank you again for being a part of this today, Izzy.